You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You ready?
Welcome back, everyone, to the Buff Hub, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Steve Vega, and I have a dear friend. I'm going to call you dear friend at this point because, wow, Sal, what a season, and we've been in contact, and slowly but surely, the Bills, they showed throughout the season just incredible potential, and obviously the season coming to just a bitter halt, but before we get into that, and we get into all the contracts and things I want to talk about, how are you? You got the offseason now. Are you going to get in drumming? What's going on?
I'm good. You know, the off season, I always tell people the off season is like me being a doctor on call. You just never know when news is going to happen. You never know when they're going to sign somebody or release somebody or all things. But, you know, normally I have a pretty good idea of when everything's going to happen because it's all pretty much laid out. This year is going to be different. We just don't know what the off season looks like, right? We don't know exactly, you know, we don't have our cues yet from the league on exactly how everything's going to go, certain dates, stuff like this. So I kind of have to wait around for that, poke around for that. Normally I'd be going to either the Senior Bowl this week or the Combine, owners meetings in March. You know, none of that's going to happen this year. So yeah, it's going to be a little bit different. So what am I going to do in the meantime? Well, I don't know. I can't drum. I got the only drum set I have here is my son's little tiny drum set. Like Max, he's got a little one. I don't actually have a drum set at my house. But I'll go to the gym. I'll work out a little bit. I'll read. I'll do some things around the house, basically fix some stuff up. I shouldn't lie. I don't really fix anything up. I'll figure things out. We've gone a year without having to do all that. So I guess what's another few months, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, over here, I don't know what to do with myself now, Sal. I don't know what to do. You know, I'm not looking forward to eating pizza and wings on the weekend now. I'm just kind of like, okay, here we go. Another off season, but you know, it's not that bitter. There's a lot of good. There's a lot of awesome things to talk about. And how about we just begin? Obviously, such a monumental season for Josh Allen and Sean McDermott. I'm going to start with them because, I mean, holy smokes, for them to just come out of the gate, not afraid, ready to rumble and lead this team to the AFC Championship. It's just incredible. So after what you saw in 2020 and in the AFC Championship run, so what do you think the Bills need to do to take that next step and get to the Super Bowl?
Well, obviously the Chiefs are the team they're going to have to get through, right? Now, who knows how that plays out? This isn't like a situation like New England where they're in their division, they're going to play them twice and they have to beat them out no matter what. You could get a situation where you don't even play the Chiefs, you know, if they get knocked off or something like that, right? So that's not the case. They're not fighting with them for the division. Now, I do think, you know, you have to think about them as in terms of now fighting for the number one seed, because let's remember, that's the only, you know, team that gets a bye week is the number one seed. So I think that the Chiefs have to be the team that you have to think about how you beat them. That said, as Brandon Bean explained as his postseason Zoom call on Wednesday, you know, the goal is still to win the division. You can't basically just not see the forest through the trees. You have to think about New England and Miami and the Jets. And that's right. That's all well and good. So I think that the biggest thing for me and the biggest takeaway is if you want to be the best team in the AFC, you're going to have to find a way to come over the top of Kansas City. I think they need more speed, both on offense and defense. I don't think the Bills are a slow team. I just think they're slow compared to Kansas City and what they can do. They're going to have to find a way to match up with them on both sides of the ball better. There's no doubt about that. But I also think, you know, there's one thing they don't have to do. They just got it. That's the experience. You know, they'll be better because of what they went through this year. There's no doubt about that. I've always said that this team reminds me a lot of the 1988 team when they just kind of burst on the scene. You're like, wow, these guys are really good. But they weren't quite ready like we thought they were. And then they got to the AFC Championship game. They went to Cincinnati. They lost to the Bengals 21-10 in that game. And you know what? The same kind of situation played out here. So I think this is a beginning, not an end. But there is room to grow and there's room to get better, and specifically to try and beat the Kansas City Chiefs.
Sal, you are an almanac. I don't know how else to call you. It's just, I can't get sick of hearing you talk about the history of the Bills and how it relates to now. You bringing that up, I think just for me, gives me so much anticipation and hope for what's to come. You're not talking about 93, 92, 91. You're talking about, you said 88, correct?
Mm-hmm. 1988. Bills went to the AFC Championship game in 88 against the Cincinnati Bengals. What's funny is, I'll tell you exactly what happened. This is, you're going to be like, no way. You're going to be like, you have a photographic memory. No, but this thing's like, okay, we all have our own things in life, right? Like, I have no idea how to change the oil in my car. Only thing I know is where to stick a key, but I know about I know the Bills, right? So I will tell you what happened. The Bills and the Bengals in 1988 were on a collision course, basically, and were fighting out to see, you know, who would have the best record. And whoever winds up with the best record is going to wind up, you know, the number one seed, essentially, and going and hosting in the playoffs. So the Bengals, at the end of the year, played the Washington Redskins, at the time the Redskins. And if they lose, the Bills get the number one seed. If they win, the Bills get it. At the end of regulation, Chip Lowmiller, a field goal kicker for the Redskins, hit the upright with a chance to beat the Bengals. He hit the upright. They go to overtime. The Bengals win. They get the number one seed. The Bills have to go to Cincinnati in the playoffs, and they wind up losing in the AFC Championship game.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Chills down my spine just hearing you talk about that. I mean, you know, thinking about this whole run and looking at where they're at now, I agree with you. Yes, you have to match the speed. You know, I also think there's a difference between speed, getting to that point of what Kansas City does, but also just being loose. And, you know, there's something about watching an offensive player play loose. And I think it just looks like they're comfortable. And I feel like a lot of what has to happen next year is a maturity factor in players just playing more comfortable. We got to give the Bills a whole ton more credit than Kansas City. Ladies and gentlemen, think about this, right? Kansas City, they have been seasoned for Super Bowl runs at this point. They don't got players like Stephon Diggs their first year just jumping in and being the number one receiver in the NFL. That's unheard of, and he was with the Buffalo Bills. And then you have Isaiah McKenzie out of nowhere just bursting onto the field, having an incredible season. I think probably the best season of his career. And, you know, obviously Gabe Davis, a rookie, coming into the scene, filling in for John Brown. There's so many narratives that go into this whole season, and all I am looking at is if the Bills can play more loose, I think they can play faster. And I think that comes with being more comfortable with the scheme, comfortable with each other, and it's almost like the offense was shocked that Josh Allen was absolutely electrifying. And I thought that was awesome. As a fan, I couldn't even process. It took me up until, I think, right around the Seattle game to really believe, like, this guy is going to be a superstar. This isn't a fluke. And at the least, we're going to finish the season with 10 to 11 wins. We finished 13-3. It's absolutely incredible. You know, I'm super pumped. I don't think the Bills had it the easiest with the second seed in the playoffs. I mean, you look at the Indianapolis Colts. No one wanted to play the Indianapolis Colts. No one wanted to play the Indianapolis Colts. Let's just be clear. And nobody wanted to play the Baltimore Ravens. The Buffalo Bills played both of those teams, convincingly beat them. For the Colts game, it was towards the end. They really put their foot on their throat. And I'm looking at the Baltimore Ravens game, and I'm applauding the defense for finally just having a staple game that really lets the league know at large that it doesn't matter. The Buffalo Bills are here to stay, and we're here to back up our offense. And, you know, I'm super proud of them. I'm super thankful. I want to finish off with this point. I'm super thankful that the Buffalo Bills stuck together through such a tough time in our country and with COVID going on, you name it. And they stuck it through, and they were a beacon of hope for people to just keep going, keep pushing. And, you know, that's what Buffalo, the city of Buffalo, is all about. And I think it's starting to trickle into the Buffalo Sabres team as well. We can talk about that another day, though. You know, super excited, Sal. And so how about we talk about something I think that is really starting to, get into people's ears.
I touch on a thing you said
there. Oh, go ahead.
ask me a question about any of it or not. I didn't know what you wanted to, you know, if you, what you thought or where you're going. So I just want to touch on a few things because I love the passion, dude. I love the energy. I love the passion. And I know like why you're saying all these things, but I disagree with you on several issues. Number one, they did not convincingly beat the Indianapolis Colts. They almost lost to them. The Colts played a great game. The Colts were right there and it came down to the last possession. You know what I mean? Like, they did not run away from them. They struggled on offense against the Baltimore Ravens. They did enough to win. They beat them the scoreboard wise. They got a pick six, but you know, Baltimore is within 8 yards of tying that up. You know, I mean, they didn't play their best football in the playoffs. It wasn't like they went out there and just went roughshod. They did in the last month of the regular season. There's no doubt about that. They were just kind of beating teams up from the get-go. But I think the discussion is, though, in what you're saying, and I guess I'm hearing you saying, like, you don't think that they were comfortable with the scheme this year, and that's why they weren't loose?
I think you look at Stephon Diggs getting plugged in, and then it's just unheard of for a player of his caliber to get plugged in right away and right away have AFC championship-type success. Literally,
he's caught 127 balls this year, though. I think, you know, that to me shows he's pretty comfortable in the scheme, right?
Well, I'm saying you look at the effect he had on the entire team, and I'm talking about at large. You can't just solely rely on Stephon Diggs. You saw what happened in the AFC Championship. I'm talking about the offense as a whole, playing more comfortable, playing more loose. And what I made the point about the whole idea of them winning convincingly, when they won the game, it's like the media and everyone at large were convinced about the Buffalo Bills. That's kind of the point that I was getting at.
I think most people were pretty convinced going in. I mean, you know, they did win 13 games. They were the second seed. I think the chip on the shoulder that Bills fans have and people in Buffalo that, you know, everybody's against us, no one believes in us. I think a lot of that is it wasn't really true by the end of the year. You know, there were lots of people picking the Buffalo Bills to beat the Chiefs, go to the Super Bowl. Lots of people. I don't think anybody, like, in fact, I think people were kind of surprised that they struggled a little bit with the Colts, you know, and that the Colts came in and had a chance to beat them. But I think what you saw in the Chiefs game is, I don't think it's any sort of uncomfortability with the scheme at all. I just think that there was an experience factor because what you said, the Chiefs had been there. I mean, the Chiefs were seasoned for that. There's no doubt about that. You know, they had already won a Super Bowl, but Andy Reid, Sean made a point the other day in his press conference, and I think it's a debatable like way you look at it, but I understand where he's coming from. He said the Chiefs are 8 years into their build. The Bills are 4 years into their build. And if you look at it, you're like, wait a minute, they've only had Patrick Mahomes for 3 years, really, right? 4 years. But I understand what he's saying because Andy Reid's been there for 8 years. So it's all Andy Reid's staff, it's Andy Reid's program. The Bills are only 4 years into Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean's program. And to me, that's the larger point of why they might have looked the way they did on Sunday. They did not play very well on Sunday. I think it was a combination of, I think they played as a team that said, oh my God, these are the Kansas City Chiefs. They're better than us. We better do whatever we can to stay in this game as long as we can. And when you play like that, that's when you tighten up and you're not as loose, if that makes sense. That's what I think happened.
Yeah. Well, going into that game, the number one thing I knew would be an issue if it didn't just get taken care of at least by halftime was separation with the receivers. And, you know, Cole Beasley, God bless him, playing broken. you know, you look at Gabe Davis playing against those receivers. And just looking at the way that defense played at large against us, look, I got to take my hat off to the Kansas City Chiefs. They did not let any receiver basically get open at all in that game. It was very tough sledding. What I'm talking about is I just think that you got new guys like Gabe Davis and they're playing on this huge stage and Josh Allen is playing on the hugest stage of his career. You know, Devin Singletary, you name it. And I talk about the whole looseness and being comfortable in a scheme thing because eventually when a team like that is playing against you and they're pressing you and they're imposing their will on you, you got to play a little bit more confident. I think that's where the issue comes from. It's like the confidence thing. It's like, okay, they imposed their will on you early, but the game's not over. And I think that the defense weren't getting their fair shake. I mean, how in the hell do you stop Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce when you're plugging up all the other holes? You're expecting your offense to at least give you that jump start when they get the ball back, and that consistently wasn't happening in the red zone. And I talked about with Bruce on the last podcast, the red zone was the bread and butter of the Buffalo Bills the whole year. Yet we weren't able to execute the entire game. And, you know, that was very frustrating. And that's where I talk about, you know, that's what I thought was going to be the, you know, the bread and butter of winning this game, or at least taking it to a point where we can win by a field goal or a touchdown, whatever. It just was one of those things where you saw we could not get a bone when it comes down to, you know, the red zone. And I look at guys like Gabe Davis. I look at guys like Devin Singletary, you know, dropping a key ball. It wasn't in the red zone when he dropped that key ball, but, you know, getting into a rhythm, I think is very necessary for the Bills going forward. And I think if we're going to get to that point, we have to be able to get there.
Right. Everything you said is right. To me, it goes back to just the experience factor being on that stage. It's not, you know, and they, but you have to, the Chiefs did a great job of forcing the Bills to be like that. The Chiefs are a better team. They just have more talent right now. I mean, that's just a fact. And the Bills went to their place. They also played in front of 17,000 fans, mostly Chiefs fans, obviously, that yes. they had not all year. I think that played a factor in their communication. You know, there's just something to be said for having that experience, being in that situation. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs have a Super Bowl. Andy Reid has been to many, many championship games. I know Sean McDermott has coached in some, but this group, they haven't been there together yet. But when it comes time, when it comes down to, like, you know, what happened and things like that, they took a page out of the reason why those receivers couldn't get open to me was they took a page out of the Ravens book. The Ravens did the same thing against the Bills, but you didn't think the Chiefs could because they don't have those corners. But the Chiefs basically said, hey, the Ravens got up, they pressed them, and they made it difficult for them to get off the line of scrimmage. And when that happens, Josh Allen has to start thinking his way through a bunch of stuff. And I think they made it difficult for him to do that. And then he had to hold on to the ball a little bit longer. He took some sacks. The other thing, and Allen talked about this, and we mentioned it on the game broadcast, and then Allen basically confirmed it after. It was kind of clear to see as we were doing the game, which is the Chiefs were really mixing things up against Allen, and he was changing the play, and then they'd mix it up again, and he couldn't change the play again because communication, number one, and time on the play clock, number two. So he'd get to the line, he'd have a play called, the Chiefs would change their defense, he'd change the play, they'd change their defense again, and now he can't change the play again. Because it's just, so now he's got to figure out what to do post-snap, and everything just kind of goes haywire. But again, that goes back to being ready for that moment, being ready for the game. If they, to me, as I think Murph or Tasker, one of them said during the game, and it was true, just call the play and go out there and execute it and just play with it. And whatever defense they call, that's fine. But no, but at least then you're having confidence in what you're running, and you're not trying to scramble to figure out what you have to run post-snap. So I think there were a lot of issues that went into that. You know, I just don't want to get too far away from, to me, I don't want to get too far away from, there was a gap between the two teams, and both in talent and experience level, and that's okay. That happens. It they'll be better for it. You hope that they have, you know, better scheme or whatever, but I don't know. I heard people like, you know, oh my God, I can't believe they didn't do this against Kelce or this against Hill. Well, look, these are all world players at what they do. You know, they make a lot of people look foolish. It's not just the Buffalo Bills. So hopefully they'll be better and they can bridge that gap and they can have more talent and coach better in that situation.
110%. And, you know, I went into that game with the expectation that it's Matt Milano or bust against Kelce. But they played more zone. So, you know, I was completely off as far as my analysis, and I accept it. I mean, I thought they were going to play more man-to-man against him, and they just play a lot more zone where they're trying to make Patrick Mahomes, you know, pick and choose, and then we weren't sacking him. And it was just kind of one of those things where I think they just had the Buffalo Bills number. You know, I want to go into the next point here, Sal. And, you know, look, I'll be honest with you. I was really hoping we'd win the Super Bowl because of what I'm going to mention to you. And then we'll get into the contracts. Look, every team in the AFC, I feel like right now, is reloading. They're like, okay, Josh Allen's in the AFC Championship. And a lot of them aren't giving us a lot of credit. They're thinking they can make the same turnaround, if not quicker than we can, than we did, excuse me. And, you know, you look at teams like the Jets. What happens if they plug in Deshaun? Look at teams like, you know, the LA Chargers. What kind of turnaround they're going to have over there? Look at the Miami Dolphins. They're a quarterback away from being able to compete for the AFC East title. Who knows what Belichick's thinking? And the list goes on. You know, the Colts are relevant again, although, you know, Phillip Rivers retires. Who knows what they're going to be trying to do? Sal, can you just answer me this? It doesn't have to be really huge, but which team in the AFC could pose the biggest threat to the Buffalo Bills as far as, you know, getting to the AFC Championship against, said Chiefs?
It depends. You tell me who the Colts quarterback is, I'd probably give you a better answer. You know, if the Colts go out and get Matthew Stafford, I think they immediately become a team like that. You know, the Colts were, everybody kept saying before the playoffs, I don't want to play the Ravens. I don't want to play the Ravens. And I'm like, I don't want to play the Colts. To me, the Colts were the worst matchup for the Bills. And I think it kind of proved out to be. And that was, you know, in the first round, I mean, because they're very well balanced. You can stop something, but they're going to have something else to counter that. The Ravens were never that team for me because I felt once you shut down Lamar running ball, you're fine. He's not going to throw on you, right? You know what I mean? But the Colts always had a counterpunch, and they're very good on defense. They're well balanced on defense too. You know, across, they have good players at every level. So to me, Indianapolis is probably that team. I don't know if Tennessee quite is yet. To me, Tennessee's kind of hit their ceiling. They are who they are, and if they catch lightning in a bottle and they get hot, they can go on a run. They can be a team like that. I'm not sold on Cleveland yet. I think Cleveland had a softer schedule. I need to see them actually be able to, you know, throw and score against teams. And I know Baker did a really good job. I'm not going to take anything away as the season went on. I don't think their defense is quite good enough. You know, I don't think Pittsburgh is there because of the way that Ben's playing or played. Baltimore could be. I really respect John Harbaugh and his staff. But again, if they're going to stick with Lamar, I just think they're just such a one-dimensional team. So with me going through all of them, I think the Colts would be my number one answer here. But tell me who their quarterback is before I actually believe that.
And now some people are going to call me crazy, but I think the Browns are. I think the Browns are the biggest threat. I'm not going to, you know, punch my ticket on the Jets or Miami because, you know, people are, oh, Deshaun Watson's definitely going there. We don't know what the Texans have planned, and they sure as hell don't want to let go of him. I'm looking at proof in the pudding. The Browns really, really rattled the Chiefs. They should have won that game. Baker Mayfield was a drive away from being against the Buffalo Bills in the AFC Championship. Make no mistake.
I mean, story-wise, that's true. But I think if you go back and watch that game, the Chiefs basically moved the ball at will on them. And then Mahomes was out with a quarter and a half left, and they were still up.
But you got to admit, like, when the guy gets a helmet-to-helmet hit, fumbles the football, you know, out of bounds, if that's a touchdown, momentum goes to the Browns the rest of the game.
No doubt. Things like that can happen. I mean, I don't know if, yes, they score. I mean, that can happen. And sometimes it's just matchup. Sometimes you just don't play as well. I look at the whole body of work, though. And to me, the Cleveland Browns, as good as they were this year, record wise and all that, they still finished third in their own division. And they had one of the weaker schedules. And I don't think their defense is very good. But you're right. They almost beat the Chiefs in a sense. I still don't think if they score that touchdown, I think that it's a different game. But I also think the Chiefs kind of really hurt themselves. Like, they stopped themselves in the red zone. They missed a field goal. They missed an extra point. You know, I mean, things like that. So, yeah, they almost beat the Chiefs. I don't think that means they're suddenly a threat to beating the Chiefs, if that makes sense.
Well, I think about getting back to the AFC Championship. I think the Buffalo Bills' toughest matchup to get there, let's say if they run into Cleveland in the playoffs next year, I give Cleveland the benefit of the doubt being the biggest threat for the Buffalo Bills being able to get back up there. Is my point.
Maybe.
You know, so I'll leave it at that because I know we can rant about that more.
I will tell you, you share the same sentiment as a lot of people online, which I reminded them today, but they don't play them next year, obviously. They're not in the same division. They don't play. So we won't even know until they get there. But Cleveland's got a tough road to go to. Like I said, I mean, they still have to go through even Pittsburgh and Baltimore just to get into the playoffs, essentially. You know what I mean? Or at least win the division. So it's true. Like, they pose some problems. There's no doubt. And if the Bills were to play them, though, I would say this. If Cleveland had won that game against Kansas City, I was supremely confident the Bills would beat the Cleveland Browns in Buffalo.
Matchup-wise, yeah, I agree. I just think I'm going to give Cleveland fans and the Cleveland Browns the benefit of the doubt. I think out of any other team in the AFC, I think they will be the most improved next year to be able to match up against the Buffalo Bills to challenge the Kansas City Chiefs for the AFC Championship title. Now, really quick here, we need to talk about these contracts because it's starting to circle around. I need you to just plug the hole. Remember that, that one commercial, the Flex Seal, you know, where you see all the water just pouring out. I feel like that's what's happening on Twitter. That's happening everywhere about Matt Milano, about all these players, Deshaun Watson, all these things going on. I want to circle back down to the Buffalo Bills here. And I want you to put that Flex Seal on that water that's spewing out real quick. Clarify the Matt Milano contract situation for the Buffalo Bills and then the Josh Allen contract. I'm just going to sit back and listen.
Well, Matt Milano is going to be a unrestricted free agent in March. Once March, what is it? I don't have to look at the date this year. 14, 15, 16 is usually one of those dates. Once unrestricted free agency hits, he can go sign with anybody, any team. He's played 4 years. That's his rookie contract, and he's earned that. That's what players play for. They play players play to get to their second contract. They want to play well enough to get to a second contract so they can get paid, because their rookie contract doesn't pay them nearly as much, especially if they're not a first round pick, which obviously he wasn't. He was a fifth round pick. So, you know, the Bills, they would like to have Matt Milano back. I know for a fact that Matt Milano would love to be back, but this is a business and these people work very hard in their entire lives, especially once they become pros and have a rookie contract, to be able to test, you know, the market and their value. And if Matt Milano's offered a really big contract with another team, he's probably going to take it, and I wouldn't blame him. I think the Bills will try. The Bills aren't going to – they're going to set a value, whatever that value is. They're going to set a value on what they think Matt Milano is valued to their team for whatever dollar figure. They'll offer him that, and if he gets paid more than that, he'll take it. If not, he'll come back to the Buffalo Bills. But I don't expect the Bills to get in a bidding war for him. That's not good business for any team. You set a value, and that's what you do. But they have time. They could literally sign him to a contract extension right now if they want. They could sign him to a contract extension anytime, or he could just come back at once he becomes an unrestricted free agent. But I don't expect that to happen. The salary cap is going to – I think if COVID didn't happen and the salary cap was going to be in a normal year, like raise $20, $25 million, they might have already gotten it done by now. I think because the uncertainty of the cap and being as low as it's probably going to be, they just couldn't do that, and they might not even be able to do it. So I think you're at least going to see him go to free agency, and then from there we'll see where it goes.
Okay, and so obviously this leads into the big question mark here. Then you got Josh Allen. What do we do with him as far as the next 2 years go then? Do we sign him early? We try to, you know, sign him next year then? Yeah. Because Matt Milano's not in, and they're clearly looking to re-sign their quarterback early.
Well, I don't know. I mean, is that the case? I think that that's part of it, right? I mean, you have to have money for Josh. I agree with you. You have to. There's no doubt. I don't think it's a one for one. Like, well, if we don't sign Milano, we're giving the money to Josh. I mean, you still have John Feliciano. You still have Darrell Williams. Like, there's guys you have to sign, and that money could come from not signing Matt Milano. If you sign Matt Milano, you might not be able to afford, you know, one of those guys and let them walk. There's, you know, it gets tricky. I think with Josh, what fans have to remember is, I would tell this to fans, don't like worry about it right now, because he's still under contract for the next year, and he's going to be under contract for the year after that, because they're going to exercise their fifth year option in May. In May of this year, the Bills have a chance to say, we're going to exercise our fifth year option on Josh. That would be the 2022 season, because 2021, he's already under contract. Fifth year option goes to 2022. So no matter what, they got him for at least 2 years. And even if things really went south, they could franchise tag him for the 2023 season. So don't worry about, like, they're going to lose Josh Allen. The question is, when do you want to pay him? And then how much does that impact the salary cap going forward? The ideal scenario would be obviously to not have to pay Josh Allen for a couple more years, but he's earned it. I mean, he's in the MVP talk, and Brandon Bean has always said, I hope I have to pay Josh. That means that we have the right guy. And the other part of this that I think people don't like always fully grasp is the player's side has a say in this, right? As much as he's under contract, you know, they could make it messy if they really wanted to and said, hey, like, we've earned our contract now. You need to pay the man, right? It's not like, it's not just totally up to the Bills. Now, contractually it is, but, you know, the Josh Allen, they don't want it to get to a point where they're fighting with Josh Allen's side. And if Allen's representatives go, we want our money now, I mean, they're going to have to do that. So I think here's my prediction. I have no inside information on this. I'm just reading the tea leaves of how I think this usually goes and how it'll go here. I think they sign Josh Allen to a contract extension this year, but I don't think a lot of that money kicks in until next year, if that makes sense. Maybe some this year, but I think the majority of that will start kicking in next year. That'll free some money up this year in a lower salary cap to be able to keep some things going, re-sign a Williams, a Feliciano, a Milano, whoever. And then more of that money will kick in next year when the salary cap goes up. It's exactly what they did with Tre'Davious White, by the way.
Well, you know what's... Look, I'm going to just be an advocate for Matt Milano here because, look, Sal, when you look at Williams, Feliciano, and Matt Milano, you have to admit the effect they had on the field. If you're going to rate it from a 1 to 10, I give Matt Milano the highest 1 to 10 rating. Because when he was not on the field, the defense was leaky as hell. When Feliciano was not on the field, yes, it stunk, but we were still able to somehow plug the hole. Defensively, we were a shell of ourselves. And yes, you look at right tackle, and it's an important position, whatever have you, but I am more convinced that the Buffalo Bills can figure out who to plug in on offensive line than I am on who they can plug in to fill in the Milano void. That's just my personal opinion from what I've seen this year, because AJ Klein came in and he became the blitzing, linebacker, but clearly was not a linebacker who could do half of what Milano does as far as, you know, affecting the defense and really just filling the void and playing really well with Tremaine Edmonds. Mind you, I think that's a big thing. It's that Tremaine Edmonds is a shell of himself with Milano off the field. And Josh Allen and the offense was still able to have success. I'm talking about the offensive side of here, where without Feliciano playing there, I know, I love Mongo. Believe me, I think he is monumental to keep, but I am looking at the future. I am looking at who we're able to plug and chug. And I'm looking at, I don't see anybody in free agency or in the draft that I think we can plug and chug and fill the Milano void. I just don't think, I'm not convinced. I trust Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott to be able to plug the other side up better than I do on the defensive side, because why? Linebackers have been an issue this whole year until Milano got healthy.
Why wouldn't you not trust them to plug in linebackers? Look, like Sean McDermott's defense is predicated upon exactly what you're talking about. It's almost like plug and play. Like, he's a really good defensive coach. As much as AJ Klein, I totally agree with you. He's not Matt Milano at all. I mean, he's a straight line guy. He's not sideline to sideline. He's not the athlete. But after a few struggles, he then became really good in their system, and even won AFC Defensive Player of the Week 1 week. Like, they were fine with him after a while, because Sean McDermott can coach defense. I think they are much better at finding defensive players that can fit in where they want than finding an offensive lineman. I think that's hard to do.
But
I also want to tell you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think you're doing what a lot of people think. It's not a have to choose Milano, you know, Feliciano or Williams and rank them. Now, ostensibly, they do have to kind of prioritize them. I get that. But really what it comes down to is what your value is on Matt Milano compared to other teams' value around the league on Matt Milano. That's what it comes down to. The Bills may very well want to keep Matt Milano more than the other guys. The question is, if somebody offers him $14 million a year, are you willing to pay that?
Yes, 110%, because...
Okay, I'm not. I am not at all. Because to me, a $14 million Matt Milano, I can put Terrell Dodson in there for a rookie contract less than $1 million a year and get not much of a drop-off. Yes, he's not as good. I agree with that. But how much does a weak side linebacker matter to actual wins? Like, if you put, they were 13-3 this year, right? The three games they lost. Let's say you had Matt Milano on the field. Do they actually win those games? I don't think so. I don't think he's the difference. You know what I mean? Like, he's very good. And over time, and I'm a huge Matt Milano guy, by the way. I love Matt Milano.
Yeah, yeah.
All I'm telling you is, if you're telling me $14 million for Matt Milano, I say, I'm sorry. I just can't do that. Not for a guy, when I have the coaches I have on defense and the way that they've been able to develop defensive talent like Taron Johnson or Levi Wallace and guys that have come in this league that they've basically made into good players.
Well, I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt. I will be heartbroken, number one, if Matt Milano does not get re-signed, but I will give the Bills the benefit of the doubt for one reason in particular: that the defense will be okay. And that reason is Star Latulele will be back. The linebackers will have it easier on the run game. So we may be able to develop someone to fill that void. But as far as me seeing who's out there, who we would be able to sign, the whole nine yards, I just don't see anyone.
Find Milano, they drafted him, remember? They could always draft a guy like that, right? I mean, they didn't draft Feliciano or Williams. They came from other teams. The Bills developed Matt Milano.
Yeah. No, they did. Absolutely did. But it took quite a long time to get him to the point of being this guy. The guy that we don't want to let go. And that's the thing I get nervous about. It's like, okay, we better hope is all I'm saying. And then not blame Sean McDermott and everyone on why things aren't working. I think I'm just leaving it at this. I think Matt Milano is just as valuable to the defense as Tre'Davious White. Tre'Davious White got cooked against Tyreek Hill. He did not play up to his contract against Tyreek Hill. Then again, who can keep up with him? I don't know. But at the end of the day, if you're the starting cornerback, I think you should at least put up a good fight. We clearly could not cover that man to save our lives. As far as plugging up the run, coveraging.
Why don't you apply the same standard to Milano and Kelsey then?
Well, because what they did with Milano is they forced him to play more zone than they did man-to-man. The whole game, Sal, I'm just being honest, I was looking at the defensive scheme and what they were doing. Matt Milano was either blitzing or he was staying in coverage. I never saw him run sideline to sideline 1v1 against Travis Kelce. And to be quite honest with you, it really upset me. And I think they're more concerned about a man with a broken turf toe being able to scramble around, which I think they should have just, going back to that game, I think they should have just literally said, Matt Milano, your assignment the whole game, do not let this man catch a football. They let him catch like 20. So it's very frustrating from a fan's perspective looking at how they handled Travis Kelce. But look, I'm not a coach. I'm not a coordinator. You know, all I know is the effect I think he could have in a game given the circumstance. And I don't think they really gave him a shot to do that. I think if they did, maybe it was just a short-lived couple of downs or whatever have you. But it did bother me that I'm looking at Travis Kelce and I don't see Matt Milano tackling him. It was always somebody else trying to tackle him. For the most part, Sal, you can look at the tape too. I saw Tre'Davious White covering Travis Kelce.
Right. That was my other part of it. Like, I think you're also putting too much on Tre'Davious on Tyreek Hill. I mean, he didn't like let him get loose for a bunch of, it was line of scrimmage stuff that they didn't tackle him. You know what I mean? Like, that's not getting beat and cooked down the field.
Well, Sal, then who else on the, if you're talking about the line of scrimmage, who else can you match up against Travis Kelce one-on-one and give him trouble at the line? Yeah. Because the minute Travis Kelce gets off the line, he's a nuisance
Right. Even Matt Milano, you're not, you don't. You have to figure out different ways. You have to double team them. You have to bracket them. To me, that would be the bigger issue. I didn't see him get double teamed much. I have no problem with playing zone. That's who they are. But you have to figure out a way to, make it a lot tougher on him. Look, Travis Kelce's going to the Hall of Fame probably. He caught 105 passes this year. He's made everybody look foolish.
100%.
I don't think there was one right answer. You can only squeeze so much blood from a stone. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's one answer. I believe if you put Matt Milano on Travis Kelce, he gets beaten all day, actually. I think any linebacker does. That's what he does. He's Travis Kelce. You know what I mean? But the Bills have been beaten by tight ends all year. Mike Gesicki had a day against them. Darren Waller had nice numbers. I have to remember what Jonnu Smith had. Look what Jack Doyle did in the first round of the playoffs. And by the way, Milano was on Jack Doyle several times in that game.
Well, Mike Gesicki was shut down in that last matchup, and Matt Milano was
present. Yeah, I mean, in week number two, he was incredible. That's right.
But the thing is, Matt Milano, when Mike Gesicki was on the field, Gesicki was nowhere to be found. I just saw that, and I know Matt Milano, I believe, was hurt in that Dolphins game, and it was AJ Klein, who was just the nickel linebacker there.
Matt Milano one-on-one, Travis Kelce shuts him down. I totally disagree. I think that they could have had a better plan. To me, that's not like what the plan should be. I think you're giving Milano way too much credit for like being a one-on-one cover guy. Especially against the guy as great as Travis Kelce.
Yep. Well, again, for me, all I care about is, I partially agree with you. What I disagree is this: we didn't really see the first matchup against the Chiefs. Matt Milano was injured. He was in that game. And this matchup, it was like we were so terrified of their motion. And I get it. There's a lot that goes into it. And I guess I just didn't see enough evidence of Travis Kelce versus Matt Milano for me to be convinced it would have been, a different story. Now, with that being said, Travis Kelce wasn't the issue at large. It was the Kansas City Chiefs. And I totally agree with you on that. I think the Chiefs just had the Bills number. I want to leave it at that because the Bills have a lot of work to do to get to that point, to get to the Super Bowl. Sal, it's amazing having you on the Buff Hub once again. Your knowledge, your experience, the history that you've lived through, about is so valuable to every Bills fan, which is why this is your second time this week being on Buffalo Rumblings. I mean, we appreciate you and everything you do for the Buffalo Bills organization and for us Bills fans. So obviously just want to give you a chance here to tell the audience where they can find all of your content. You are the host of WGR Radio, which my dad also, I just want to tell you, he says hi. He misses you and he hopes everything's good.
Hi to your dad. That's right. No, what's his name?
Louis Vega.
Lewis. What's up, Lewis? No doubt. Yeah, Sal Sports on Twitter, obviously. I'll be on in the mornings and the afternoons. I'm usually on every day with the guys, but now it'll be a little less frequent, but they'll still have me on. And then, you know, now's the time people start taking vacations because the season's over. So I'll be filling in as a host. So, you know, you'll be able to hear me on WGR, no doubt. But, you know, Sal Sports on Twitter, I tweeted out yesterday and this week's that if people want to see like the contract chart, I have it all color coded. Who's a UFA, who's an RFA, like stuff like that. I'll be doing to, you know, keep people updated on what's going on and things like that.
Fantastic. Well, Sal, it's always a pleasure having you on the Buff Hub, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. Thank you to everyone listening this whole entire year, hearing me rant, hearing me belt my lungs out about what I think the Bills should do, whatever have you. I really appreciate you on Twitter, everything, all the fan response. So have a great rest of your weekend. I don't know who you're going for in the Super Bowl. Who do you got, Sal? Real quick.
I'll take the Chiefs. I don't think the Buccaneers offense can hang with them.
Okay, I'm actually going to go with the opposite. It's another conversation for another time, but I really do believe that the Bucs defense is underrated. I think Evans is going to pose trouble for their cornerbacks.
They're very good. There's no doubt about that. I think it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, well, Lavonte David, you got the other guy, 45 there. I mean, fantastic linebackers. So we're going to see what these Hall of Fame studs are going to do in this MJ versus LeBron-esque matchup here. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen, again for joining me on the Buff Hub. Have a great rest of your weekend. Go Bills.